Fourth and final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, sponsored by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Joe Rex Road, David Beauclair from SI.com, Michelle Knezovic. And back into some Titans talks. Two-tone at eight, presented by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. And this is my question for you, David. Who would, of this team,
yes,
who will be or is under contract for next year, do you think we might be seeing for the final time in this postseason? Because the Titans are going to have to make some tough choices. We've laid that out a little bit already. We see it every offseason in this league. Who are you looking at for that?
You know, to their credit, they don't have a ton of guys under contract for next year. But they've got some big numbers that complicate the picture. Like Ryan Tannehill, for example, his cap number is going to be $38.6 million, which is more than twice what anybody else is going to be. That's, you know, so, but at his age, are you going to extend him so that you can bring that cap number down?
So you can keep
kicking the can? Yeah, I don't know that you want to do that. So there's two guys that jump out at me as likely near the end of the road here. Julio Jones. I think Julio's going to be a one and done.
That's a lot of dead money, though, right? What's the dead money number on that?
If you cut him pre-June 1st, $13 million. You can get it down to under $5 million if you designate him post-June 1st. According to overthecap.com.
Okay.
His cap number is 14.3, and I was saying, you know, you've got to extend A.J. Brown. I would think you take, you know, you're basically taking Julio's money and throwing it at A.J. and saying, you know, you're our long-term solution. And even if Julio has a great playoff run and they win the Super Bowl and he catches the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl, you say, thanks, we brought you here to win a Super Bowl, that's what we did, we're moving on. And the other guy is Taylor Lewan. And I say that as much because I think Taylor thinks that as anyone. You know, he has gone out of his way in recent weeks several times to say things, you know, talk about how much he has appreciated the opportunity here and how much he would love to be able to play his whole career for one team and whatnot. I mean, I don't think he's done with football. I don't think he's he's ready to hang him up. And if he does get cut, I think he'd sign somewhere else. I don't think he'd hang him up. But it feels like he sort of thinks that. And I think the way Dylan Raiden's played against San Francisco did Taylor Lewan no favors in that regard.
Think it was that good, huh?
Well, I think it was good enough that they can feel like, you know, at some point they've got to start getting younger and cheaper on the offensive line. And, I guess you could say Roger Saffold's maybe in the same boat because Aaron Brewer's a guy who you could potentially plug in at that spot. I don't think you go Dylan Raiden and Aaron Brewer as the left side of your line next year. I think one of those guys has to go, and I think you've made the significant draft investment in a tackle. And we all said, well, Raiden's would be the right. Maybe he's better suited at left tackle than right tackle because he certainly didn't put up much of a fight to earn the right tackle spot this year.
Well, yeah, and also, and you know, look, when it didn't work out for him, we could see very quickly in camp that it wasn't working out for him. Then he moves inside, and he's done a ton inside. I know that he looks at himself as a tackle. Do you not think there's any chance that he could be, you know, the left guard?
I don't. No? I just because he seems to get He's got so far to go in pass protection in there. He seems to have a lot to learn still in terms of passing off. What I think he's much more comfortable. Okay, I'm on the outside. I got to keep this guy from getting to my quarterback. I think that seems to be, you know, certainly that's the way it looked against San Francisco, and I think it'd be a risky move for sure. I mean. Like I remember in 2014 when Taylor Lewan was drafted, and it might have been the smartest thing Ken Whisenhunt said as head coach here. He said then, you know, we're picking 11. You don't want to be this high in the draft very often. This is where you get guys at this position who can play a decade for you, right? And he's like, so we need to take advantage of it, and we. You know, in picking Taylor Lewan, we think we're not going to have to address left tackle now for a long time, and he was right. And there's always the, well, who are you going to get if it's not Taylor? And you know, maybe you roll the dice on Radins, and he's next year's Christian Fulton, you know, who didn't play a lot as a rookie, stepped in as a starter this year, and has been a pretty darn good cornerback for you. Oh, there it is. There's the
number one,
mute button.
Joe.
It's actually amazing. I've had like 19 of them. I wonder what Ryan Tannehill would think about that. You know?
Yeah.
Like, hey, you get swap in Radins for Lewan? Yeah. What do you say, Ryan? Well, so if we're because I agree. Like, I don't see how they move on from both Lewan and Saffold. By the way, they're pre-June 1. Dead money numbers are 1.8 mil for Lewan, so it nosedives. That's why this is now on
right.
the table. And then Saffold's 2.4 million. So
both of them affordable. In that regard.
And their cap numbers are next year: Lewan 14.7 and Saffold 12.9. Big cap numbers. I don't see how you can choose. You can't make the choice to go new both spots. I don't think.
I don't think so either.
I guess I lean more toward. Lewan, keeping Lewan and Saffold gone just because I feel like Saffold, I like him a lot as a player. I think, you know, there's nothing to not like about Roger Saffold other than, you know, I mean, he's been hurt. The last couple of years, there's a lot of crouching over after the and gearing up to play on Sunday after playing. You know, like, I mean, I'm assuming he's going to have something done
right.
this offseason, but that's where – I think I lean toward Lewan. I just still think it's so critical to have. And I know there's people out there who hate Lewan, and he's the podcaster and all this stuff, and certainly he's had his rough moments this year. I feel like he has looked more like Lewan in the second half of the season.
And he's still eight, and you mentioned this earlier, atypically athletic for a man that size, right? You know, even if Radins is a really good tackle, you know, he's not going to be Taylor Lewan and do the things that Taylor Lewan's been able to do. And you can argue if you're going to replace one of those, you could make the argument maybe that Aaron Brewer is more ready than Dylan Radins is, because Brewer has played more. Brewer has filled in
and he's
an athletic guy in there too. You know, he's not just like, he's not Quentin Spain, who was relatively not athletic, but you know, he was just going to maul you as best he could. Like, Brewer's a guy that they talk about is maybe the second most athletic guy in that offensive line room behind Taylor Lewan, and maybe that's an intriguing possibility to put those two guys next to each other.
Yeah, and that to me makes more sense. I mean, I would feel more confident with a Brewer in there as opposed, you know, Brewer Lewan than Radins Saffold.
Yeah.
And then what about Ben Jones? I mean, is Ben Jones?
You've got to draft a center at some point, or you got to do something. But I, you know, as long as Ben Jones says he wants to play, I'm sure they're going to be happy
they'll
to have
take
him play. Yeah.
Yeah. They'll keep him. Beyond that, you know, another big decision, because this could be it for him too, is Harold Landry. I think it's one of two things. I can't imagine. I just, the numbers don't add up to me.
They don't to me either.
To extend him, I think the tag could, you know, it's still strapped for next year, but that could be you know, a possibility, especially because I would think that you would very much want to keep those four guys together next year. The other three are going to be there for sure. But I think certainly, I mean, this could be Harold Landry's last go with the Titans.
I think it's absolutely true. It's a Corey Davis situation all over again, or a Jonnu Smith, right, where you'd say, do I want to have this guy back? Absolutely, I would love to have this guy back. Can I afford him? Does it make sense in my business plan? I don't think it does, because you're paying Bud Dupree all this money. And I think you paid Bud Dupree all this money with the idea that we're moving on from Harold Landry a year from now. We're going to put somebody young beside, or opposite
maybe
him.
Rashad Weaver.
Maybe Rashad Weaver. Maybe you draft somebody second or third round this year. I think Rashad Weaver was certainly the thought. I don't know that we've seen enough of him that you can be convinced of that. But has Landry played really well this year? Of course he has. Has he played well enough to alter that plan? I don't know that that's the case. I think that's one of those deals where, almost like another example would be Jack Conklin. You say, you know what? We drafted you. You did what we wanted you to do. Now it's our responsibility to move on and get another one like you. And they haven't gotten another one like Jack Conklin yet, but that'll be the challenge with Landry, I think.
But they have drafted. They have drafted two right tackles very high to attempt to do that.
Yes.
Well, and the Landry situation is a lot. It's like Bud Dupree's situation in Pittsburgh. They drafted him. They loved him. He was a very good player. They tagged him, and then finally, it's like, we're going TJ and
pay both of you.
Yeah. So I think he's definitely a possibility. If you want to get in on this, the phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com 615-737-1025. Two-tone at 8, presented by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. When we come back, we'll continue the discussion. Who on this Titans team may be making their last run during this postseason? Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back, Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We're talking about Titans who may be short-timers here, even if their contracts doesn't necessarily read that way. Gator Tim on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com says, if you weren't paying Bust Dupree $16 million for his three sacks, you could pay Landry. I think Bust Dupree is intentional, not a typo. Three sacks for Dupree, and I think you kind of put it well earlier in the show, calling it kind of a redshirt year. Now I think the same thing with Dupree and Julio Jones. You're looking for some payoff here right now. This is it right now for some payoff, and I think Bud Dupree. I mean, look, three sacks is three sacks, but you also knew he was coming off an ACL. I mean, like, if you're being realistic about Bud Dupree as a Titans fan when he was signed,
you were taking what you could get.
Yeah, you had to know that, one, I mean, I guess the best case is that, like, okay, slow first half, and then you go nuts in the second half. It hasn't quite worked out that way. He's had other injuries, too, but you had to know that, like, this would probably be the least productive in theory, because he was coming off the knee. But I think he's looked good, and he's close to making more plays. He's got to make them, some of those plays.
They are 9-2 in the games that he's played this year. 3-3 without him.
They're a little better with him.
And no, that counts New Orleans. Probably shouldn't count the New Orleans game. He played one snap in that one. But the mistake was playing him early. I mean, he wanted to play. He felt good. I'm sure they felt the, you know, like, well, we're paying this guy. He's, you know, all the reports are good. Let's go ahead and play him. You know, I think it probably would have been better in hindsight to maybe wait until 4, 5, 6 games into the season before you, and then maybe ramp him up a little bit as you went, as opposed to throwing him in the deep end the way they did. I mean, he played 70% or more of the snaps first two games right out of the gate, and one of those was an overtime game. That, I mean, he playing a lot and hard snaps early, and even he said at a certain point that was too much too soon.
Yeah, like he took the blame basically. But I mean, I think that is one of the situations where it's like, okay, well, someone save you from yourself, right? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's I know it's easier said than done sometimes, but that is part of the deal. Is you're not going to find a ton of people who don't want to, especially new city. Everybody's talking about, oh yeah, well, it was nice to play with T.J. Watt, right? And like he had a lot to prove.
So that's big contract. You want to live up to it, and he's a guy who's clearly not afraid of coming back from the injury, right? I mean, he's out there running around now as he was in September and August with no brace on the knee, no anything, not even a sleeve on the knee, right? I mean, he's clearly a guy who has that ability to say, "Yep, they fixed it. I trust it. I'm going to go play." And that's a rare quality from what I've seen from pro athletes. I mean, most of them are human beings, right? They need a little reassurance and sort of to build some confidence going in, you know, along the way. And he apparently didn't need that.
What do you think, by the way, of his whole thing with the misdemeanor assault and the Walgreens, and what's your,
you know, we've seen that little bit of video that looks good for Bud with him pulling people off. I'm sure if and when he talks about it, he's going to say he feels he was provoked. And I mean, we don't know. To his credit, he didn't run and hide from it. Police said they wanted to talk to him. He went and talked to them twice. It's a misdemeanor. It's a misdemeanor charge. Let's not go crazy until there's reason to go crazy. I think, the timing of it obviously was unfortunate, but I don't know if there's ever a good time for something like that. But there's nothing to say that, boy, the Titans threw all this money at a bad guy.
Yeah, that would be an overreaction for sure. It's a distraction, and it just whatever all happened, like, to me, it's just you never make the decision to go back into a place if you're in that position, because you're the one who's going to pay. Ben on the text line says many fans didn't want the project year of Dupree when we're trying to get a ring in a short window. Yeah, but I mean, if you're running a team, like, yes, you make go for it moves like Julio Jones, yeah, right? But you also, like, you are thinking 23 and 24 and 25, and this was a long-term decision for Bud Dupree. But also, again, you can't tell me Bud Dupree isn't going to be a big factor here, good or bad, win or lose. I mean, he's got the potential to help you win in the playoffs.
And keep in mind, it was a decision that was made after your team had 19 sacks in 16 games last year.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was considered not a little problem. It was considered a huge problem. And you know, this was a guy who had had 20 sacks combined in the previous two seasons, and a guy who would, you know, his job all those years in Pittsburgh was to rush the passer. It's one of those things. I'm sure the Titans' first offer was not 5 years, $82.5 million, but undoubtedly other teams were interested in him as well. Price went up. That's what it took to get him.
Yeah, Gator Tim says he almost makes plays. He's done that his entire career. He doesn't finish or make tackles. You will see. The numbers don't back that up. And one thing about Bud Dupree that I know the Titans liked is that he does set the edge, that you can play him He's not just a DPR. I mean, right. You know, you can play. I mean, he had 68 tackles in 2019. You know, he had 11 and a half sacks that year to go with that. He had 8 last year. And remember, he had 8 last year in 11 games. So you're talking about 27 games, 19 and a half sacks leading into getting this deal, along with, by the way, 99 tackles in those 27 games. That's production. That's a guy who makes plays.
He's a bigger guy than you think. I mean, he's almost 270 pounds, right? He doesn't look like that.
Yeah.
So he
thumps.
Yeah, he's got some of that to him. But it is. I mean, largely, you can make the argument that 3 sacks out of him this year is good, considering he's only now, 13 months removed from reconstructive knee surgery. I mean, he was playing. I mean, his games were basically part of his rehab for much of this season.
Yeah, but again, so it's, I mean, look, he's, to me, that element of this team is, it's just got to be great. The Tampa Bay Super Bowl run last year, those guys played absolutely their very best. It all came together for them with that defensive front. They were overwhelming. I mean, they were, and certainly, like, when you play like what Kansas City's offensive line was in that Super Bowl, then it's unfair. But they were brilliant, overwhelming, dominant throughout the playoff. I don't know that this can be that, but this can be awfully good. We've seen it be awfully good. Bud Dupree's got to be a big part of that.
Yes. Yes, and you know, let's offset this by talking about DeNico Autry and what a rousing success he has been.
Yeah,
you know, and
at a great
and sort
price.
Sort of taking advantage of some of what was created by adding Bud Dupree and whatnot. Like who in this town was excited when you saw the Titans sign DeNico Autry last March?
I thought it was great.
I mean, you go, yeah, okay. But, like, who was excited about it? Who was like, yeah, that guy's going to turn this defense around? You thought, well, that's a piece. That's interesting. Okay. At least I did. And, you know, but now you're like DeNico Autry. that's good GMing right there.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. You can move him anywhere.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, the numbers are very good. The production is good. The humiliating of various offensive linemen, you know, just if there was a stat for that, like offensive linemen get pancakes, like, you know, DeNico Autry needs some kind of stat for like making offensive linemen look bad at times. He's a very interesting player, and yeah, a huge addition. And that's the thing, again, go back to that Kansas City game with, you know, Bud Dupree gets the strip sack, but all those guys had their moments, and it was like, wow, okay, yeah. How different is that? Like you said, 19 sacks last year, which is tied for the lowest ever for a team that made the postseason. That's how bad it was.
Yeah.
So pretty massive difference there. We're going to get back into some Preds talk next. We're going to have Hal Gill talking Preds Sabres here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back, Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe Rex Road, David Beauclair in for Robbie, Michelle Knezovic. Very happy to bring in our next guest, Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst, brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts, featuring their newest next-gen location at 500 Cool Springs Boulevard. Hal, how are you?
I'm great, guys. How are you?
Pretty awesome. Thanks for asking. And I will tell you one thing. I would like to see another Preds Avs game ASAP. I know that's not happening for a while, but how great was that?
I mean, the build up was exciting. You know, you got the top team in the division. You got the team with the best percentage in the division, and so it was pretty built up, and usually that's a letdown, and not this case. This was everything and more. That was a great game. It was fast. It was you know, it was surprisingly clean. It was, I mean, it was physical, it was hard, but it wasn't dirty at all. It was a hard playoff-type style game, and hopefully we can see more of that. I feel like we've been pretty blessed this season to see the Preds playing that kind of hockey.
So how much value, Hal, is there to the Preds in winning that game? How real is the confidence boost? How real is the sense that, okay, we're now the team to beat in this division?
Yeah, I think that's, I think when you look at Colorado since day one in this season, you're looking at them as the team to beat. That's the creme de la creme. They got high-end talent. If there's one thing they're missing, it's a goalie, but that's it, which is kind of a big one, I think, they're seeing right now. But that's a team you got to go through. And with the Preds, now they're looking at themselves like, hey, we're the total package. We got it all. We got young guys chipping in and playing hard and scoring some points. We got our veterans and elite players are being elite and playing like veterans. And we got the defense backed up and with a good third pair, and then you got the goaltending. So I think the big thing takeaway from that play is that game is that the Preds can play with anyone, and they got a well-rounded team, and so any way you want to play, they can play with you, and that's the encouraging part about this team right now.
And that's the thing, like we've talked so much, Hal, in the last year or so, about them kind of realizing this style of play that John Hines wants and adapting to it and really flourishing in it. But that was my, other than the obvious, okay, Duchesne Johansson and their contracts and all that stuff, are they going to produce? But just can you get into a game with a team like this and keep up when maybe the game is played and not exactly how you want it to be played? Because sometimes it just happens, right? And I guess, this is one game. Do you feel like if we got to see a series between these teams, would it look a lot like that? And could the Preds, prevail in a series against that team, do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think what Colorado does really well and has done to the Preds in the past is line matchups and taking advantage of getting a third D pairing out against MacKinnon, Rantanen, and Landeskog. And then they start buzzing, and Cale Makar jumps in the mix. And they did it. They come in waves like that. They did that where on Cale Makar's goal the other day, they came in a wave, and the Preds, it's tough to stop them when they go like that. That's why that team has come back from so many games from behind to find wins. And so I think they take advantage of a lot of teams that way. I think the Preds are built different right now. I think you can take, a full healthy team. I think you can take Borowiecki and Benning and put them out there, and they can hold their own. I've really been impressed with the way that they've been playing. I think you put any one of the lines out there, you're going to have big, solid guys that can play some defense. And so up and down the lineup, I think you can have guys out there. So teams like Colorado who like to stack the deck against you and take advantage of your lower players, that's not going to happen. And I think the Preds have proven that, where they can hang with teams and they can find ways to win. And that's in large part due to the depth that they have.
That Cale Makar goal remind you of your playing days, by the way, Hal? That bring you back?
That all the time. how dirty was that, though? Seriously. Oh. It's so fun. Like, first of all, in that shift, MacKinnon just goes on overdrive and is buzzing all over the place. The Preds kind of say, okay, we'll keep him to the outside. They did their job, and then you hand it off to Makar, and then Makar does that dirty move, the 10-2 at the blue line, and then comes down and smokes the shot, top cheese, and you're like, who do we have to stop? Who's coming against? It's crazy. That was fun to watch. As a hockey fan, I appreciate that. As a Preds fan, maybe not so much.
You mentioned Colorado maybe a little shorthanded in goal. That's not an issue with Nashville. And UC Soros certainly wasn't an unknown coming into this year. But as he has played well and done the things he's done this year, how much do you think that has freed up the skaters to be a little more aggressive, to, you know, have they changed or expanded the way they play in front of him now based on what they've seen?
It's something I was thinking about, I have been thinking about a lot. And I asked Roman Josi on Smashville Live last night, you know, are you playing different? And because I've been there where you feel like you're doing all the right things for a goalie and trying to get out there and block shots for him and do and be the best you can be. But then sometimes when you have so much confidence in your goalie, you just let him take the shot and you stand off to the side and take away the backdoor play and say, okay, go ahead, try to beat my guy, and it's not going to happen. Juice is too good. And so you have confidence in that. And so I did ask Josi about it, and he totally agreed.
Hal, last thing I've got to ask you about young Max. First of all, I think I saw Max tweet after he was on the Max Herz on the call with you, with Pete Weber unable to go. I think he had a beer at the bar. Is Max old enough to have a beer? Is he okay?
No, I think Max is
like
26.
I should have asked. I didn't ID him.
Yeah, did he show you a fake or what?
Does he have a fake?
but in all seriousness, that's just a way of keeping humble a guy who I thought was freaking great. I mean, you guys sounded great. What did you think of Max taking advantage of that opportunity?
Oh, I really wanted to make fun of him. I really did.
No, keep going.
You know, I wanted to see a misstep, a stutter or something, you know, and he didn't give me a thing. He didn't give me, like, say someone's name wrong, you know, like Vladimir Michuzkin is out there. Just mess it up once, and he didn't. He was awesome. He nailed everything. You know what, it was a lot of fun. It's like, you know, when I played, it was always fun to have the guys come up and play their first game. The excitement, it's kind of contagious. You get that vibe from them, and he had the same thing. It was awesome. He was jacked up, and you know, when we finished that game, he was just like, "Wow, that was awesome," and he nailed it. And so, great job to Max, and we had a lot of fun.
And you've bounced back and forth between the TV and the radio a little bit lately. Is it a dramatically different job, one medium to the next?
Well, you know what? It's kind of funny because I guess I don't realize it, but the more and more you go back and forth and you realize the differences. You know, it's on TV, you got a full team of guys in a truck that are counting on you to tell you something, and you know, it's when I'm in the booth with Pete or with Max, it's us against the world. You know, we got someone going, but we control the content. We can talk about whatever we want to. So it's just about having two players or having about 10 players. But either way, it can't be better than just sitting there talking about hockey all the time, right?
It's a sweet gig, and you guys do an awesome job with it. Hal Gill, brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts, featuring their newest next-gen location at 500 Cool Springs Boulevard. And Hal, you've got a word about Dunkin'.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny because we talked about this sponsor, and I said Dunks is coming. Yeah, I want to be the Dunks guy. Coming from Boston, it was, you know, there's a Dunkin' on every corner, and now I'm pretty excited. There's one on Harding Pike, I call it, and it's right by my house. So I'm there a lot. My kids are there a ton. Chicken biscuits are fantastic. My son loves those. I'm always up for. They got omelet bites now with bacon and cheddar. It's pretty terrific. But yeah, it's the Dunkin' Midnight. That's my go-to. Keep it black for me. So if you get out there. I think January 21st, they're going to have a grand opening at that 500 Cool Springs Boulevard route. So go check that out. They got some giveaways and some prizes. So, it's pretty exciting things going on with Dunkin'.
There we go.
All right, final segment here on Robbie and Rex Road. ESPN 102.5 The Game, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio. Joe Rex Road here. David Beauclair in for Robbie. Michelle Knezovic. Robbie did text me, though, earlier. Said the Beatles are cheeks. Are you familiar with this term, Beauclair? Cheeks?
Cheeks?
Cheeks.
No, I guess I'm not.
So we have a scale of crappiness on this show, and this is basically what I do is I listen to my 14-year-old and his buddies talk to each other and make fun of them, but also adapt their, from, you know, I adopt their language. So we, trash, you know, kids, are everything's trash. Oh, that's right. Trash. Trash, bro. Okay. So then the next level of bad is dog water, which I actually kind of like. Like, that's kind of good. You know, dog water. Like, that's just, you know, that's something that's not good. And then cheeks, though, is the absolute, like, that's the worst. Cheeks. And I don't even really totally understand it, but it's kind of funny. Your cheeks. I don't know. I don't know, man.
I assume it comes from butt cheeks.
Well, yeah, and, yeah. I mean, you know, yeah, just, that's it's, what, right.
Yeah. Okay, yeah,
that's what I would assume too. I mean, yeah. I guess it could be rosy cheeks, smacking in the face. I don't know, but yeah, probably butt cheek related. Yeah, I wasn't going to come out and say that, but now that you
it
did,
it might be a way of saying a hole. You know,
well, Joe, I think you said worse on the air than butt cheeks.
Well, that's true. Sometimes I say things that apparently I shouldn't say, but then, like, if you don't say them too much, it's okay. I don't know. I toe the line a little bit there. But anyway.
I got a little something here for the last segment.
Okay.
That should give Titans fans
that
a little.
That isn't cheeks?
A little. That isn't. I don't think it's cheeks. Okay. Are you familiar with the 33rd team? It's a website. It covers the NFL, mostly scouts and front office people,
yeah.
and they, you know, they, so they give a, you know, a different sort of perspective. Anyway, they had an interesting item this week. They, with what they call their comprehensive passing metric.
Okay.
It's an advanced stat, obviously, that they have come up with, that they figure judges quarterback's performance by game or by season. And we all know Ryan Tannehill yesterday was named AFC Offensive Player of the Week. According to the 33rd team's comprehensive passer metric, that was the sixth best performance by a quarterback all season.
Wow.
Behind one each by Dak Prescott, Jameis Winston, Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, and Joe Burrow.
Pretty good quarterbacks.
Which
for the most part.
But which, you know, and the stat I saw that I thought was real interesting, it was only like the seventh time ever a team had four different receivers with at least 50 yards and a touchdown catch.
Wow. You know, I mean, that is it did strike me, but that's still, like, I would not, like, have guessed that, though.
Yeah, it was pretty, the really interesting part that makes you think there's something to the comprehensive passer metric is that typically the guys on this top 10 list, like, they won by 25 points, by 35 points, by 12, by 20, by 18, by 28, by 22, by 27. Like, usually that kind of performance. Well, we all know what happened.
Right.
Sunday wasn't the case. I mean, it was a 3-point win. So, you know, I guess I'm sitting here trying to figure out, does that mean even Ryan Tannehill at his very best doesn't make the Titans a dominant team? Or was that an example of the Titans had to have Ryan Tannehill be at his best to win that game, and he actually came through?
Well, I think it's more the latter, because we're used to the defense playing better than that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen Tannehill play really well, and everyone play really well in 27-3 over the Chiefs, right? So, but that's an interesting stat. I'm assuming that has to do with pressure you've seen, windows you throw into, because there, you know, there were three or four passes in that game. There was one to Westbrook Akina, not the one where he got out of the sack, but another one where it was tight and he got it and he snuck it in there. It's an interesting idea for a metric. I'd love to know, like, what are the factors?
Yeah, it's among other things, passes of 20 plus yards, air yards per attempt, interceptions, sacks, completion percentage over expected.
So that's and that's there's something that called speaks to what I just said.
Inclusive total conversion rate, fourth down conversion rate, red zone TDs, second quarter offensive points. Apparently, the second quarter is a big deal. Yeah, that's
interesting. But okay, that all makes sense to me except for the second quarter thing. Why
explain it? It doesn't. Let me see if it says specifically about the second quarter here.
Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, here it is. What's with the emphasis on the second quarter?
Yeah, there you go.
Although coaches and media emphasize the fourth, it's actually the second that has the largest impact on whether a team wins or not. In 2020, the team that scored more points in the second quarter won 73.5% of their games, while the winner of every other quarter is below two-thirds of the time.
Okay, so if this is true, and we've got to get out of here in a few seconds, but if this is true, should the Titans not switch to giving Derrick Henry 15 carries in the second quarter? How about that, huh?
Yeah.
Put all your eggs in the second quarter basket.
If I'm not mistaken, the Titans have been really, really good in the second quarter this year, right?
Yes, they've had slower starts this year. Their second quarters have been good. And we're going to pick this up tomorrow. But that's a good stopping
point. Their highest scoring quarter of the season, yeah.
There you go. The metrics back it up. Number one seed. All right, David, thank you so much for coming in for Ivy. We're going to have you again tomorrow.
Let's do it tomorrow. Yeah, I'll be
I'll
back.
Try to be a little less frazzled tomorrow. Michelle, thank you. Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been Robbie and Rexrode. Darren Donick and Chase coming up next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.